The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, CBS Sports Daily NFL Podcast. I'm Will Brinson. I'm your host. It's Tuesday, July 21st. Training camp is on the horizon. He said in, whatever voice that, I guess that's Ron Burgundy. I'll just read whatever's on the prompter, but no, we don't know. We think training camp is about to happen. Of course, we will keep you updated on the COVID concerns going along, and we will be talking with Jason Lacanfora later this week and Jonathan Jones, our NFL insiders, to break down what they think is going to happen. So make sure to subscribe. You get the podcast dropped to you right away. You can also watch on YouTube. Go to youtube.com/pick6 and hit that subscribe button if you're not banned from YouTube like I am. And you can join us and watch all of these videos. They're not live, but you can watch them later on. You can fire us up on your television, when you're waiting for baseball to start. Also, while you're waiting for baseball to start, opening day is Thursday. Gerrit Cole and the Yankees facing off against the defending World Series champion, Washington Nationals. And the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast is banging out big episodes all week long. Scott White, Chris Towers, Adam Azer, and Frank Stanfill are getting you ready for the 60-game sprint, as well as everything you need for your week one matchups. Make sure and subscribe. They got tons of great content, even if Adam Azer is involved. Fortunately, Frank showed up and rectified Azer's presence by making it a much better show. Suck it, Azer. Talking trash about me on the Fantasy Football Podcast. I'll come at you, buddy. You can find Fantasy Baseball Today anywhere, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever else you get your podcasts. Okay, training camp battle time. Joining us now for, it feels like the third time in the last week, but that's a good thing. Cody Benjamin, what's going on, buddy?
I'm happy to be here. I think it's number three. Training.
Who's keeping track of anything?
I don't know. No, I got a scorecard right here. No, training camp, what a weird – it feels weird to even be writing about training camp battles because, I mean, even if there is camp, I mean, are these guys going to be – are they going to be hitting each other? Are they going to be – are we allowed to have competitions? I mean, there's so many questions up in the air. But there are jobs to be won, and I think that kind of intensifies these battles that need to happen.
Yeah, I would encourage everybody to go read Peter King's story in – on NBC Sports, he got a behind the scenes tour of the Minnesota Vikings setup. And, you know, Cody, I know it was interesting because we saw a lot of athletes or professional NFL players over the weekend tweeting, you know, we want to play. And it became clear. I mean, they were sort of fired shots at the NFL. Now, whether that was strictly related to health concerns or partially related to financial concerns is irrelevant. What they're letting the NFL know is that they don't like the current setup that the league has put together, and therefore they would like the league to change their approach there. I did think Peter's story, though, sort of gave me – I've been getting a little more nervous about the season and training camp and everything opening up on time amid the coronavirus concerns. Peter's story on NBC Sports – I was like, man, the Vikings kind of had this together. Like, they got something cooking. You got to do, like a retinal temperature scan with a mask on. It can't be activated without a mask. Everybody's got to wear a mask basically 24/7. They've modified the food setup. They modified the locker room setup, the training setup. I mean, there's only so much you can do, but I feel like the Vikings have done as much as you could ask them to.
Yeah. And I guess the interesting thing, stemming off that conversation is every team on the same page, because the Vikings may have that, but then you've got a team like the Raiders where a few weeks ago, you know, you've got Mark Davis saying, we still want to fill the stadium. Like we want to fill it up. And so, you know, he's since updated that and pretty much said, you know, there's probably going to be nobody there. you got the Chiefs. They're saying they're going to have everything at Arrowhead. I mean, there's, yeah, I think it is a credit to those organizations that have been out front on this. I mean, we've had months to kind of sit here and think about how things could look. But yeah, I mean, it is getting close. I mean, we're only a few weeks away.
I will say this too, by the way. Sorry not to jump in on you, but I think you're right. The difference in how these various teams are approaching it, and I am in no way making an analogy or a comparison to the state of our country at all when I say this. But no, Cody, you got to understand, I am not making that comparison. Do you see what I'm saying? I'm not making the comparison that there should be a unified approach from up top that leads to a more cohesive attack against this virus across the entire spectrum of the NFL. And maybe some leadership up top would be fantastic to issue some directives that tell these various teams what they should do at the independent team level. But I am not, whatever you mean, I'm not
making a
comparison to the country. This is strictly the NFL that I'm talking about.
Well, first of all, if you're not making it, I think that you're...
Don't make it. I'm not making it.
I got some spit on me from over here.
Sorry.
I think that if you're not making the comparison, I don't see why it's wrong to do it. I mean, I don't think you're being partisan or whatever. I think the fact of the matter is, look, the season is supposed to start the camps are supposed to start this week. Preseason games are supposed to happen so quickly. I mean, yes, I think it does mirror whether or not you want to call it that or not. I think it mirrors. I mean, you know, I could be in Minnesota right now and the restaurants don't allow you to sit without a mask on. You could go to another state and it looks different. And that's not saying something political. That's just the reality of the world right now.
Well,
these teams,
like people from different states, are going to inherently be mingled. I mean, like, these teams are going to play each other. And this is part of the problem that the college game is facing right now, too, as it relates to COVID-19, and not to get off into this whole topic, we'd say the training camp battles, but I think it's related. So, they cancel all these non-Power 5 games, right, the non-conference games. Well, part of the problem is that, so hypothetically, NC State plays at Liberty at some point later in the season, or scheduled to. Liberty doesn't have or maybe they play at Troy, whatever the case may be. Liberty does not have the infrastructure or the budgetary means to test these players the way that a Power 5 ACC school will. That's where the NFL is different. All these teams are owned by billionaires. They have tons of money. There needs to be a consistent infrastructure in place. And part of the problem with the league is that I think the league looked at how coronavirus was trending and said, all right, we'll be fine in July. But now it's July and the trend is still going back up. And that is where it gets a little dicey.
And it's late July. I mean, we're on the verge of, know that they canceled the Hall of Fame game, but like all of this is, I mean, can anyone right now, you know, we're sitting outside of these negotiations, but can anyone even inside there say definitively, like, we're going to have football the first week of September? No. And that's not even talking about training camps across 32 different teams. I mean, it is nuts. And I think no matter what, though, it's going to be messy, because if they decide, let's just say the billionaires put their money towards all these resources they need to do it, well, then you're going to have people saying, actually, these resources should go to the public right now.
Yeah.
You can't get a
test in Florida, but you can get like one every day. Like the NBA guys are getting tested once every hour. I mean, there is a moral quandary that needs to be addressed there that isn't being addressed.
And that's not to say there isn't a place for sports to come back. And obviously both you and I would benefit from having the NFL happening this season. but you know, we want it to happen, but it's just, I think no matter what, this is the reality. Like, we're living in a pandemic still. Regardless of how seriously you take that, I mean, the NFL has to grapple with that. Like you said, morally, but also economically, I think no matter how it happens, it's not going to be pretty.
And I think that, and I'm not calling out Roger Goodell, because I don't think this is Roger Goodell's fault or whatever, but I think that a lot of times the leadership done behind the scenes, it would behoove the NFL to issue, like, to be a little, not more transparent, but maybe a little bit more vocal in how they want this to be handled, and to emphasize to teams that it is important to have consistency across the board, because there are, you know, like, they don't know whether they're going to allow, like, they're basically saying, okay, If your state allows mass gatherings, you can have fans. But if your state doesn't, no fans for you. And the Patriots have already said they're going to max out at 20%. The Eagles have said they won't have fans for at least, the first 6 or 8 weeks, whatever it is, to however long they did it. But the point being is that there's not even any consistency there. And I understand you have to deal with the jurisdictional issues of where you play football and all that. It just feels like the NFL has an opportunity to be aggressive and be nimble, and it's not doing that. And that applies to this sort of the player union stuff too. Like you're going to find somebody. You're going to use the CBA to find somebody if they don't want to show up because of maybe like health concerns. I mean, you got to be kidding me.
And then you'll have,
but how can you prove that? Let's say hypothetically, so who hadn't signed the franchise tag? There's got to be who's
Ngakoue.
Yeah. Let's say Yannick Ngakoue tweets, I'm concerned about my health and I don't know if I should be there for Jaguars training camp. Are the Jaguars then going to fine him? Because I mean, you know, like, and I get that maybe Yannick isn't really concerned. You know, I just think there's a whole host of issues that come into play and that the NFL should be a little bit more flexible on this labor agreement than it sounds like they are being.
Yeah. And maybe this won't be the case if they come to an agreement, but if they do start fining people like that, I mean, would it be surprising to anyone if there was some kind of mass, you know, walkout or something? Because I mean, you've got every big name that you could think of in the NFL join this social media campaign to pretty much put the ball in the NFL's court and say, look, we want to play, but you got to figure it out.
Baseball players did too. They were very aggressive leading up to the return to baseball, and they got the 60 game schedule or whatever. It's a different animal with football just for a variety of reasons. But I do think that the star players like Russell Wilson saying, hey, my wife's pregnant. Yeah. I got concerned. I mean, if Russell is not he is not worried about finances. Like his financial future is set forever. But I mean, he is a borderline Hall of Fame quarterback in his prime with a team that is a Super Bowl contender. So how do you balance, you know, having a pregnant wife at home with wanting to be the guy who tries to lead this team and young receiver? You know, I mean, that's a really tough ask for someone who is the face of the franchise, but also clearly a very dedicated father and husband and a good person behind it. It's a weird, weird moral time to be making
this. Yeah. And it's not the NFL's fault that a pandemic struck, but
also there's no force majeure in the CBA, which is a problem for the NFL. Yeah. They cannot declare act of God, we're not paying you.
And I just think it can't be stated enough, like the fact that we are, you know, we're almost in August. I mean, when you're sitting here right now, I mean, is there any way to you that week one happens on time right now? Mm-hmm. Or
week one could happen. But I mean, my sort of expectation has been that training camp would be a lead up, like that basically that I've been saying for like weeks now that I thought they would cancel the preseason entirely and just like do an extended training camp. And that way you've got some windows if you need to hit pause because guys get corona, et cetera, et cetera. And again, we'll talk to JJ and JLC about this a little bit more. But yeah, I mean, I think it can still happen, but I'm certainly a little more skeptical than I was in the past. I would not be at all surprised if we saw the NFL take, there's a chunk, I think it's like weeks 3 through 6 or five or whatever it is, that they can slice out of intra-conference games, move to October 1. Well, you move to October 1 as your start date, and then you decide, are we going to go 16 or 12?
Right.
And yeah, none of that would surprise me. I think they've built enough flexibility from that standpoint in where they can sort of be reactionary, but it's very disappointing to see how they've handled
it. Yeah. Isn't it going to be weird if in a few months we're talking about, hey, did you see how Patrick Mahomes played at the end of the fourth quarter? It just seems weird to even be talking about Chiefs and Steelers or whoever, you know?
It's like, what was it? What else were we doing? It was like the first golf tournament when they came back, and I like could not get excited about it. And I don't know that it's because I don't want to convince myself that it's just going to be fine.
Yeah.
And now golf has been fine and that's awesome, but golf is, I mean, you know, anybody, golf is not a problem from a socialistic perspective. All right. Let's get to these training camp battles. Number 5. This is on CBSSports.com and in the description. Cody ranked the 5 most intriguing 2020 training camp battles. And spoiler, many of them, most of them, are quarterback battles, as they should be, because those are the most intriguing training camp battles at a time when we don't really know what what training camp is going to look like. We haven't seen any all-season mini camps. But number five is not. In fact, it's not even a battle between a player on a roster or two players on the roster. It's a battle of John Robinson, the Titans GM, and Jadeveon Clowney. And your first sentence or first phrase is, didn't see this one coming, did you? No, I did not. Didn't see it coming, Cody.
Well, I got you then, Will. I like I just think, again, I mean, most of these are quarterbacks, and that's because, I mean, if we're talking about, you know, football coming back from a pandemic, is everyone's first concern, like, who's going to start at the number two cornerback spot for Dallas? I mean, I think it's like Jadeveon Clowney is still a big name. And I think, you know, when he signs somewhere, that's still a big impact, even though his market has been really quiet, or he's kind of held out. And the Titans have been flirting with him for a while. The connection is there with Mike Vrabel. He knows the division. I mean, I think the fit works really well. It's just a matter of, are they going to make this marriage happen? And I think if it's going to happen, I mean, it should happen in training camp. I mean, when is he going to lower his price enough, or when is someone going to take a bite out of the apple? I think it happens in the next few weeks if it does. And I think that marriage makes sense. It's just a matter of, is it going to be John Robinson or Clowney that kind of compromises?
Yeah, if I'm Robinson, I mean, I'm really looking at, you know, a situation where, I mean, don't the Titans have a chance to – I think the Titans are built with enough consistency, albeit with a different defensive coordinator, where, I mean, they can be a Super Bowl contender. Now, you're asking for a total lack of regression from Derrick Henry and Ryan Tannehill, which is asking a lot. But I think you're going to see teams early on – and I've said this ad nauseum, but I'm going to keep repeating it. I think teams that have a simple offensive structure and consistency at quarterback, offensive coordinator, offensive line, and head coach are going to be at an advantage early on in this pandemic season that we think will happen, because you're not asking for a complex, you're not giving anybody a complex learning curve on short notice with distance learning. And, you know, you're not asking these guys to become cohesive randomly. So what I'm saying is, I think a team like Tennessee that can power run the ball, that has a quarterback and receivers and a running back who are all on the same page as the current offensive coordinator, can be really dangerous. Having said all that, you know, why not go out and sign Jadeveon Clowney? Why not spend up a little bit? I think they have $23 million in cap space. Like, go get the dude on a maybe, and maybe it's, you don't want to spend $23 million on a 1 year deal. I don't know. I think they should make a move for a win now window though.
Yeah, I mean, they spent some money on Vic Beasley, but to be honest, I don't really get that excited about Vic Beasley. I mean, if you see Clowney still out there, I think you could say, let's make up for this sunk cost of Vic Beasley and pair him with Jadeveon Clowney. I mean, I think Seattle makes sense for a lot of the same reasons. I mean, you're talking about, this is a team that wants to run the ball and play defense. I mean, why not add a huge presence to that defensive line? I do think it's a lot to ask Tannehill and Derrick Henry to do the same things that they did. But if that's the case, then, you know, this is a guy who, yes, you've got to check off those health concerns. But if you can do that, I mean, he's familiar with the system. He can come in and start right away.
Yeah, and I think if you sign Clowney, the nice thing about Clowney is he can move around a bit. Like, he can play inside a little bit more. You know, he's played 4-3 end. He has played 3-4 outside linebacker in Mike Vrabel's system. So, and you have a new, you know, I mean, presumably Mike Vrabel can be heavily involved, but DNP is gone and the defensive coordinator, you know, calls and all of that. So to me, what you can do is, not only do you bring in a guy who's much better against the run than Vic Beasley is, but you bring in somebody in Clowney so he improves your run game. He allows you to make Vic Beasley a situational pass rusher. Yeah. You can roll out there in third and long and let him just get after the quarterback, because he's not an all-around player. Harold Landry eases some of the burden off of a third-year player who's a potential breakout, and it'll make guys like Jeffrey Simmons and guys on the interior that much better. So I think it's kind of a no-brainer if you can do it from a salary perspective. The one hang-up might be that Clowney wants, you know, $25 million on a one-year deal, which is not happening.
Yeah, who's giving that to him?
Right. I mean, he's going to have to sign a two-year deal with, like, a player, however you do it, give him a player option or whatever it is, but they're not going to take a $18 million salary cap hit right now and go into camp with less room than they would like to have, I don't think.
Yeah. I think John Robinson has done like exactly what you just did in some conference calls. I mean, he's talked about this hypothetically as if, you know, oh, we'll have Clowney here and Beasley here. Like he's flirted very publicly about this possibility. It's just a matter of, like you said, money.
A couple of honorable mentions just to cover them, because I'm curious. Mark Ingram, J.K. Dobbins, Ravens running back. I like that one. I don't think Ingram will lose. I really think people are overdrafting these rookie running backs. And I know that you have the Rams on there, Cam Akers, Malcolm Brown, Daryl Henderson. Oh, Panthers, the entire roster. That's funny. Kerryon Johnson and DeAndre Swift. I think the Colts qualify with Jonathan Taylor, Marlon Mack, and Naheem Hines. To me, again, I go back to the learning curve in the offseason. Running back is probably the easiest thing to learn, but you're getting minimal reps at running back. There's a reason these teams are not just cutting bait on the veteran running backs that they have. I think they're going to be more inclined to ease in the younger guys this year than ever before, possibly, maybe with the exception of Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Although, as you know, as an Eagles guy, neither Brian Westbrook nor LeSean McCoy were bell cows in their rookie season.
Yeah, no, I think, for instance, the Mark Ingram one, I mean, it's not really that
I had a wide and varying question that wasn't really a question. So
well, for the Mark Ingram, it's not almost, it's more so just the intrigue of that running back room. I mean, the fact that they are part of that offense now. I mean, you've got a battle there, but I think it just speaks volumes about how dangerous that offense could be. I mean, you're adding J.K. Dobbins to Mark Ingram, to Lamar Jackson, to everything they've got going on there. But yeah, those other situations, I mean, nobody really excites me for the Rams running backfield. I know, they're opting to go with that rotation instead of Todd Gurley, but, yeah, I think there's a case to be made that, you know, a lot of these guys are going to be eased in. DeAndre Swift, I think they're all going to be kind of a 1-2 punch starting out.
I agree with you. So the Jets and Giants just issued a joint statement about fans. I'm guessing there won't be a lot of fans at Jets.
They said only Giants fans, no Jets fans or something like that.
Wait, did they really do that?
No.
Only crazy. Giants fans. So Jets fans can come watch the Giants play. Okay, so moving back to unless there's somebody else you wanted to touch on from the honorable mention. Actually, the Eagles wide receivers. We mentioned Philly really quickly. I think that is an interesting battle between some of those guys. J.J. Arcega-Whiteside is like turning into like a trendy little sleeper in the fantasy community.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah.
We got to bring. Are you serious?
I wouldn't touch him.
I don't think I would really touch him. No. I mean, you could ask Debo. I don't know. But
Debo?
He stinks.
What?
Stay away.
Rookie last year. Y'all are nuts.
Listen, he might have a rebound, but I'd say that's a deep sleeper if it's a sleeper.
We're talking like 22nd round of like a really deep draft here.
It's too high.
I'd still take a flyer on Goodwin maybe above him. I don't know.
Really?
I guess the benefit that he has is he's not a speed guy, so he's going to play that role that Alshon Jeffrey would. And so he might get targets, but I mean, Wentz didn't look for him at all last year. He had a very bad rookie season. I don't know. Okay. Watch, he's going to go off now for.
Sure. How do you guys think that battle shapes up between, so I mean, like, is Alshon going to be ready? I don't think so. Right?
I doubt it.
Are Eagles fans counting on Alshon Jeffrey at all this year?
I think there's this assumption that he's just going to be ready to go week one. I think more that's the national perspective. They just slot in Alshon Jeffrey, and then a lot of Eagles fans recognize. They're like, no, he's not going to be ready.
Right.
Yeah. No, I don't think internally the Eagles are expecting him to be ready, but maybe at some point during the season. I think you're opening with DeSean Jackson, hopefully on one side, probably JJ on the other as the outside receiver. But then you've got Goodwin and pretty much whoever one of those guys can offer speed, whether it's John Hightower that they drafted, Quez Watkins, if just one of those can hit and give you speed outside of DeSean Jackson, I think that's what you're looking for.
Yeah. And Rager's their guy. Like they love Rager, but you're asking for a big leap from any rookie wide receiver to be an impact guy. And I know I say it over and over again, but a shortened off season in which the learning curve is different. It is asking a lot of a rookie wide receiver out there. So we will see about that. All right. Philip Lindsay and Melvin Gordon is interesting too. I would rather have Philip Lindsay in fantasy. People are taking Melvin Gordon way too early, in my opinion. Number four on your list. This is intriguing, I think. I don't know that it is necessarily as much of a battle per se, but yeah, anything can happen. Tyrod Taylor versus Justin Herbert. What percent chance, Cody, do you give Justin Herbert supplanting, taking that job in training camp?
In training camp? That's like a pretty low
one.
Oh, I go 15%. Is that?
Yeah, that's actually high, I think.
Yeah.
I think it's like five or less for me.
Yeah. The only reason is because, I mean, physically, I mean, when they finally get out there, when you've got just to see his skill set, I mean, he's got the physical tools. I mean, he's going to be able to go out there and it doesn't take much practice for him to just fire the ball. I mean, really well. And so, yeah, I think it's pretty clear just Anthony Lynn's history with Tyrod Taylor, the fact that Tyrod Taylor's been around. I mean, you're probably right. It's less than 15, but I think that, you know, the Chargers offense, I think is good enough that if you have a competent quarterback in there, a guy who's not going to throw a bunch of picks, I mean, they've got playmakers that can help him out. I think that maybe there's a point in the season, what if Tyrod Taylor goes down for a week or two and Justin Herbert maybe makes some mistakes, but he's also got this crazy arm talent. I mean, do you just roll with the upside? I don't know. I think there's a chance later in the season.
Yeah, so obviously Tyrod Taylor was the starter in Cleveland and then got hurt on Thursday night in week 3 against the Jets, and Sam Darnold looking great, and then Baker Mayfield comes in and Sam Darnold never had a chance at winning Rookie of the Year again, which cost me some money. But and then Tyrod Taylor didn't see the field again. And then he backed up Phillip Rivers all last year. Anthony Lynn loves Tyrod Taylor. Like, find Anthony, the only thing I've ever seen somebody love more than Tyrod Taylor, or than Anthony Lynn loves Tyrod Taylor, is me and my love for the tiny little triangle pieces that come on a thin crust Domino's pizza. You know, like when you get the little, you ever get the thin crust Domino's and they cut, the way it's cut creates four little triangles.
Oh, I see. I thought you meant like there's these tiny, like minuscule little triangles on the pizza.
No. I'm talking about the little corner pieces. Like, I love them more. They're like top five in like things I love in life, which is weird. But that's how Anthony Lynn feels about Tyrod Taylor. The question is, what would need to happen because I don't think Justin Herbert will win the job. I just think, again, the learning curve too steep. Tyrod Taylor, no, Anthony Lynn knows what he wants to do with Tyrod Taylor. I believe Tom Telesco has promised Anthony Lynn 16 games with Tyrod Taylor because he said, I can win big with this guy if you just let me try. The question is, what would the record need to be for the Chargers to pull the ripcord on Tyrod Taylor? They open up with at Bengals, Chiefs at home, Panthers at home, at Buccaneers, at Saints.
Well, I just think that's an interesting perspective. I mean, but what if my question would be, what does Tyrod Taylor's record at the end of his 16-game trial have to be for them to pull? I mean, because how long do you sit Herbert? I understand that he's maybe a prospect that you would want to sit anyway for a year. But they, you know, they were going quarterback no matter what early. I mean, that's what Telesco said. They would have taken Tua if he would.
Yeah.
So it's clear that I don't know if there's a disconnect between the coach and management, but
I think it's kind of the timing works out where they can have their cake and eat it. Where he's like, all right, we're going to give you a season with Tyrod Taylor, but you know, we got a young guy and it actually works out because you think you can win with Tyrod. That's great. And they are on the same page based on everything you hear out of Los Angeles. Like there's not a situation where Anthony Lynn is like desperate to win, so he's going with Tyrod Taylor. It's more like Anthony Lynn is getting a full season here. And like, if he goes 12-4, they win a Super Bowl, you know, we're having a whole different conversation.
Yeah.
If they go 10-6 and lose in the playoffs,
I think that's an easy out. I think that's still easy enough.
No brainer, right.
And when you're trying to find a quarterback, there's nothing wrong with having more than one option. I mean, you have to do that until you find the guy.
You also don't know if Herbert will be ready or at what point he'll, like Russell Wilson and Matt Flynn, that was sort of the approach that the Seahawks took. And then Russell was ready a lot sooner than they thought, you know, Rivers and Breeze. I mean, this has happened for a long time. Rivers and Breeze, Carson Palmer and John Kitna. Carson Palmer's number one overall and they sat him for a year and let Kitna play, and it worked out to where Palmer is very good. So there's no right or wrong answer to this.
I would say if it's like mid-season and you're looking for a record where they'd have to put Herbert in, I mean, I would think it'd have to be pretty far below 500 just because the roster is good enough. That
3-7 maybe?
Yeah, that's right on the line there. I think that because, I mean, if you're Anthony Lynn, you've worked with Tyrod Taylor, even if you start 1-3, 2-4, I mean, I feel like you know him well enough that if you're willing to go into the season with them right now with this roster that's capable of going to the playoffs, I think you can turn it around at that point.
Especially when you didn't sign Cam Newton or Andy or anybody that, you know, could have given you another bailout option. Yeah, I agree with that. I think you might have to be like 1-6. And at 1-6, you're like, listen, this just ain't working.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, the top three training camp battles to watch.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
You mentioned Tua Tagovailoa, the number 5 overall pick by the Miami Dolphins. He is battling against Ryan Fitzpatrick. A very distinct difference, I feel like, with the like, it's like Tyrod Taylor's the guy. I don't know that we know who is the guy in Miami, right?
No, but I do think, I don't know if you get a different vibe from this, but I feel like there's kind of this assumption that, I mean, Ryan Fitzpatrick will open week one, and he's with the medical issues, I think a lot of people think, you know, the Dolphins, if they're smart, would keep him on ice for this whole season. But I don't know if that's the case. I mean, I know Brian Flores stuck with Fitzpatrick longer than maybe people wanted last year, you know, try and give Josh Rosen some time. But I think Tua is just different and better than Josh Rosen. I mean, they handpicked him to be the next, you know, homegrown face of the franchise. I think there's going to be some temptation. I mean, he's a playmaker too. He's not just, he's going to stand there and get hit behind the line. I think that, there's going to be some serious temptation to get the excitement up. Unfortunately, I don't know if there's going to be fans there to cheer him on, but the Dolphins fans at home, I mean, I think that they would be pumped to see him come out there, whatever place that is.
It's weird because right now we should be talking nonstop about Ryan Fitzpatrick versus Tua Tagovailoa. Like, that should be a major storyline. And we have no idea. We're just in the, is there going to be football stage of the proceedings, which is much less enjoyable than the who's going to win this quarterback battle stage. But I mean, that's the nature of what we got to deal with. I know the Sun Sentinel has written, and I don't, Tagovailoa has made significant progress and is ready for on-field activities if/when training camp begins. It's just a matter of how much of a workload he can handle and how rapidly he can progress during the process. My take is that, and I think we mentioned this on our Dolphins podcast with,
how old is Ryan Fitzpatrick now? Is he almost 40?
Yeah, I mean, I think the number is probably depressing for someone of my age, but he is 37. Oh, my God, I'm older than Ryan Fitzpatrick. Crap. He is 37. I'm 2 years older than Ryan Fitzpatrick. That is depressing.
I just think we certainly can't write off the possibility of an injury there, too. Sure, I mean, he's getting up there, and I think
he plays a crazy style. Like, you know, he puts his body at risk. I mean, he was running the ball like 10 times per game at one point last year. I do think the addition of Chan Gailey speaks volumes to the Dolphins' interest in rolling with Fitzpatrick this year and letting Tua learn from a veteran offensive coordinator who has a pretty good history of developing mobile quarterbacks, or at least, you know, I mean, like, he got Ryan Fitzpatrick $80 million or $60 million in Buffalo. And so Fitz and Chan Gailey are boys. So to me, it, that sort of, I feel like is like sort of a giveaway that, hey, we're probably going to go with Fitz. And, you know, this is a team where if it's like 2-4, 2-6 at midpoint.
But the division is wide open. And so
maybe,
but I mean, you know, going into the season, I would think all the teams are going to believe that. And so,
I think that's right. But I'm just saying, if it's like, if you're 2-6 at midpoint, it's like, all right, Tua is healthy, ready to go. Yeah. He's progressed in practice. Let's see what he's got. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Going into the draft. So I think CBS Sports or Mark Sanchez was doing a feature where he was sitting down with these prospects, and I had a chance to talk to Mark about each of these quarterback prospects. And one thing that he specifically highlighted about Tua was, I mean, this guy is like, when you're sitting down in the meeting room, he might not necessarily seem like he's like up to speed, but when you put him on the field, I mean, he's just a very instinctual on-field player. And so I could see, you know, maybe there's a scenario where Fitzpatrick gets hurt. Maybe he, you know, when Tua gets on the field, I think it's just going to be hard for fans and the coaches to not get excited, you know?
Yeah. And I think you make a very good point about Josh Rosen too. Josh Rosen was a, like, have you ever bought some clothes on clearance? Like that you're like, I don't know if I can pull that off, but it's cheap. I'm gonna give it a shot. I think I bought some like blue pants like that, and regrettable decision by
like light blue.
Yeah.
Baby
like,
blue.
Yeah. Like sort of like
Panthers blue.
Borderline close. Like it's all, and they're all, they might have been linen. It was like from Bonobos, and like it was like $15 on a clearance sale. And I've never worn them. Never even bothered. Like I got here, I was like, nope, not going to happen. And I know I can't return it, and that's fine. That's the risk reward of the clearance sale. But that's Josh Rosen. Like you're like, all right, this, you know what? These pants aren't working. So Ryan Fitzpatrick, you're in. And as you,
what?
The story, like, you know, Brian Flores was justified in saying we're bailing on Rosen. You can't do the same with Tua, though. You have to be careful. If you put him in and he struggles or he's taking too many hits, you know, you run the risk of really messing up his development. And in this particular offseason, I just think teams will be a little more conservative.
Yeah. What an interesting early career trajectory for Josh Rosen. I mean, what a lot. I mean, this is going to be a lost season.
Situations you could end up in.
Yeah. I
mean, number two, Cam Newton, Jared Stidham. My buddy Adam Gold of the Adam Gold Show, 12 to 3 on 99.9 The Fan in North Carolina, or in all of it, statewide, I think, said that he thinks it's a joke or something. He said something like that. He was like, I don't think it's a battle. Not talking about your article, just in general.
Sure.
Do you think that this is a battle, or is this just a question of Cam's health?
The thing is, I mean, Cam Newton is Cam Newton. And so, he's got the resume. He's got, I mean, he's just, I would imagine that Josh McDaniels, I mean, the whole staff is going to be pumped to be able to work with such a different kind of quarterback, than Tom Brady. And I think it's hard to, like, if you were to say Cam Newton instead of him, I mean, it's no question that Cam is the more talented, more ready quarterback. And I don't think it's going to be Stidham in week one, but I mean, this is Bill Belichick we're talking about, and this is the Patriots we're talking about. And I know quarterback might be different than other positions, but we've seen time and time again. I mean, the Patriots, if somebody's going to take a swing on a veteran, a big name veteran, it's them. And it doesn't always work out the way, I mean, I think of like Chad Johnson. You know, you might have brought him in and you expect, well, he's going to get a starting job. And no, I mean, he did nothing. And they've had plenty of guys like that. And I don't know that they would do that at quarterback. But it's not like they catered to his demands early on in you know, free agency. I just think I think Cam Newton will start, but I also wouldn't put it past Bill Belichick, to try and just outsmart, do some kind of weird thing and say, look, Jared Stidham has been in our system for a whole year. He's a little bit healthier. I don't know how that would rub on Cam's ego to be out there holding a clipboard in week one, but I don't know. I wouldn't put it past them.
I think if that happens, I think Cam either, and this is my opinion on how it'll play out and who the hell knows, but I think Cam will either win the starting job. Cam will either be placed on the physically unable to perform list and be out the first 6 weeks of the season, or Cam will be cut rather than Cam as the actual backup.
Exactly.
And I think the cutting part of it maybe even less likely if you could use the pup list. But the point being is, like, I don't think they'll keep Cam around as a backup. Sure. Unless he's not healthy enough to start week one, in which case you roll Stidham out there, you see if he can win some games, let Cam rest a little bit more, let him rehab, get him get comfortable with the system, and then all of a sudden you bring him in late in the year and you run it. I mean, you let Cam be Cam, you unleash the lion, to use Cam's terms, and hope that it results in a bunch of wins down the stretch. But I think there's a small percent of me that thinks Jared Stidham could just beat out a healthy Cam. And if that happens, I mean, the Patriots just aren't skipping a beat.
Like, it's the fact that it's the Patriots. I mean, I just don't, is anything ever really a given with them? I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, I mean, it's rule fun.
Out, like assume Bill Belichick won't be good at your own risk.
Yeah. And however that looks, I mean, I don't know if it, yeah, I think it'll be fun to see Cam Newton in a Patriots uniform, but I don't know. I wouldn't rule it out.
All right. And the number one battle this offseason. You knew it was coming. I got an Eagles fan producing the podcast. Got an Eagles fan appearing on the podcast. The savior of the 2017 season. No, savior's an unfair word. Nick Foles versus Mitchell Trubisky. This is when it gets really interesting if we don't have training camp. Because nobody's seen Nick Foles, you know, play. Nick Foles hadn't played with these guys. Whereas Mitchell Trubisky at least has a rapport and an understanding of the offense and has been there for several years. If it's a normal, how much of a difference do you think that the amount of training camp and the amount of reps matter for this in terms of handicapping who would win?
Well, that's the huge question. I think this is the most intriguing, not because of Nick Foles, but because I think this is the most legitimate open quarterback competition of the list. I mean, Ryan Pace says, I mean, they've declared this a competition. I know that, you know, Anthony Lynn says it, but we know that's a different scenario with Tyrod Taylor. This is, you know, Mitchell Trubisky's job is on the line, and Nick Foles has backers on the coaching staff. I mean, in the offensive coordinator, the head coach, the quarterback's coach. And, I think training camp time, preseason time does have an effect on it, but, the tricky thing is, I think Nick Foles has the support of the coaching staff. I think that those guys, I mean, you don't bring in Nick Foles. You don't give up a draft pick. You don't give him $21 million guaranteed over the next 3 years and have these staff members that really helped him thrive when he was in Philadelphia. I don't think you bring him in because you expect him to just be on the bench all year. So, I mean, I think it's almost a given that Nick Foles will start some games this year. It's just a matter of, does it start in week one? Does it start in week four? Does it start because Trubisky gets hurt? But I think no matter what, he's here to start.
If Nick Foles doesn't start any games, it means that Mitchell Trubisky is getting franchise tag next offseason, probably. Or Nick Foles, like, broke his collarbone in week, like, came and replaced struggling Trubisky in week one and broke his collarbone. You know, something like that. I think
no. How good does Trubisky have to be to keep him off the bench? Because, I mean, it's not like he was unless I'm wrong, I mean, it's not like Trubisky was the worst quarterback in the league last year. I mean, what if he just is good enough to win games? I mean, is that enough? I mean, they brought Nick Foles in to have an open competition.
Yeah, but I mean, I know that you guys have a little bit of a bias towards Nick Foles.
And now, listen, I'm saying Trubisky could start the year. Yeah, I just think, well, look at the coaching staff.
What I'm saying is that if you bring in Cam Newton, he ain't like that is an intimidate. Cam Newton is an intimidating presence on the depth chart for an incumbent starter who is desperate to salvage his career, or a young quarterback like a Tua or a Dwayne Haskins. And I think that's why there wasn't interest in Cam.
Whereas Nick Foles is, he'll be comfortable to sit on the, like, he's got that personality too, where
he's not going to rock the boat. He's not going to come in and rock the boat. If he doesn't win the job, he will understand that he's going to get his shot at some point. And when he does, he's probably going to lead the Bears to the Super Bowl. I'm not saying that Nick Foles is not a threat to Mitchell Trubisky, because I think he is. He can easily win the starting job. But I think that Ryan Pace, going into this job, I think Ryan Pace has some confirmation bias that he would love to have occur in terms, like, he would love for Mitchell Trubisky to just make it an even or like close to even in a muddled battle. Cause then I think they'll default to Trubisky because they do want him to succeed as much as they're willing to just get moving along from him because it's embarrassing every time Patrick Mahomes throws a touchdown pass that you took this guy over him.
Yeah, because you could still sell it as we actually just traded for Nick Foles. I mean, down the road, you could sell it as we just wanted him to be a really good backup because that's what he's been for a lot of his career. I mean, he's been a reliable clutch backup. And so, yeah, I mean, I guess ideal scenario is Trubisky wins the job. He plays really well, and Nick Foles is just a really good insurance policy. But I just think the trajectory of Trubisky's career will probably lead to Nick Foles ends up starting some games, and he's got a coach who probably is okay with that happening.
Yeah, I think that's probably spot on. And again, I mean, these top three that you listed, I know it's easy to default to quarterbacks when we're doing these exercises, but they are the most interesting battles. I mean, these are big, big battles that are going to determine jobs, contracts, you know.
It's the quarterback.
It's a quarterback.
It's a starting quarterback.
It's also like it's like Tom Brady's successor. You know, the number five overall pick versus, Fitzpatrick and, you know, Trubisky versus Foles. Like, what is Trubisky's future? What is Foles going to get one more shot? So, I mean, I think all these things are very interesting. Did you think about putting the Redskins on this list at all?
Yes, actually I did. I mean, because I don't think, Ron Rivera passed over the Cam Newton possibility, but he did bring in Kyle Allen, who knows the system. I mean, earlier in the offseason, I mean, I don't think it was crazy to rule out the fact that he could have held an open competition. I mean, there was already, you know, whispers of maybe Washington wasn't on the same page when they drafted Dwayne Haskins. I mean, nobody would be surprised about that. But at this point, I mean, Ron Rivera, I think when he was asked most recently about the Cam Newton possibility, he said, you know, if we bring somebody like that in, we're going to take away a chance to see what we have in the young guy, the young guy. That's Dwayne Haskins. And so, I think he'll give, you know, it's a given that he's going to give him a shot to start the year.
Yeah. And I think Ron Rivera, it's a good point. Ron Rivera knows that, you know, as talented as Cam Newton is, I mean, he's probably not going to play when he's 37, just by nature of the physicality with which he plays and his injuries and all that. So do you play him? Do you bring him in and blow up your 1 year to evaluate Dwayne Haskins?
Yeah,
I mean, there's so much else going on with the Redskins, but I agree with you. I think if you draft Dwayne Haskins that early, you need to find out what you have because, you know, next year you could be a 2 to 3 to 4 win team that is looking at a quarterback. You can't spend a year trying to figure out Cam and Kyle Allen when you need to know if Dwayne Haskins is any good. So we will.
I think bringing in Kyle Allen, I mean, it doesn't do obviously the same thing that bringing in Cam Newton does. He's younger. He's, you know, if you need him to start at some point, maybe he can, but he's not going to, like you said, bring that presence. And then if Haskins doesn't pan out, they can do what you did in your mock draft when remember when Washington took Tua? Everyone was in an uproar.
You mean this coming year, take another quarterback?
Yeah, right. No, I mean, they could do something like that.
Well, I mean, I think if Haskins doesn't, I think this year, clearly from what Ron Rivera has been given the authority to do, I mean, like Ron Rivera is like listed as like the guy who's going to come up with a new name for the team. You know what I mean? He fired as many people as he wanted from the front office. He fired the trainer who'd been there 30 years. You know, he brought in his own guys. He's been given essentially carte blanche to reboot the culture of the Redskins, something that in the wake of Friday's news about the multiple 15 women coming forward with sexual harassment claims needs to be done. Ron Rivera, I think, also will have the freedom from a football program building perspective to say, hey, look, Dan, I know that Dwayne is your guy, but we got a full year looking at him and it just ain't it, Chief. Like, you know,
imagine if they would have hired like a first year head coach or something to be in this situation. I mean,
tough spot, man. I mean, and lo and behold, they hired the only guy who in the past, I think 25 years had presided as the coach during a gigantic front office sexual harassment issue.
Maybe that was part of the interview process. I don't know.
I hope not. I mean, he did. He was the coach when Jerry Richardson was forced to sell. And, you know, so I think in that, and he has his daughter, as he pointed out to somebody, who it was. He texted.
He works in the organization.
He works in the organization. So, I mean, not that you shouldn't have, not that Ron Rivera is a good man and he has all the motivation in the world to clear up that behavior in the office. So you don't need any extra motivation. But if your daughter works in that office, you might have some extra motivation to go in there and be like, hey, listen, no more. You know, I mean, so I think he's a good guy for the job, and we'll see how all of that plans out. All right, at Cody J. Benjamin on Twitter. Go check out the training camp battles on CBSSports.com. Coming up, Jonathan Jones, Jason Lockenfora. We will tell you whether or not football will be happening, potentially. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. Thanks, Cody.
Thanks for having me on.
Streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.